Agnes Sampson stared out across the sea. The moon was full this night. It glittered on the calm water with an icy brilliance. From her clifftop vantage, Agnes could see a ship far out towards the dark horizon, its great sails glowing, bone white in the moonlight. With a sneer, Agnes turned her back on the ship and strode through the heather that clung to the clifftop in a great purple-brown blanket, her cloak billowing and snapping in the wind. Across the bleak moorland, the rest of her coven stood in a half-circle, watching her approach. They were arranged around a small fire, where an iron cauldron hung suspended over the flames. Heavy hoods hid the women's faces in shadow, but Agnes could see their eyes, agleam with reflected firelight. She approached the cauldron and peered at the liquid that boiled and churned in its iron belly. It was thick, greasy, reeking of sulfur and rotten meat. Agnes inhaled deeply and grinned, her toothless gums shining wet and red in her wrinkled face. She gestured with one twisted hand at her coven, and as one they stepped forward. They began to chant in a language long dead, guttural and harsh, their voices hissing in a low, hypnotic whisper. Acrid smoke from the cauldron billowed around them as one hooded figure shuffled forwards, a rough sack clutched tightly in her fist. The sack was bulging, wriggling as though full of maddened eels. The hissing chant grew louder. Agnes could feel her heart hammering with wild ecstasy. The devil himself was in the air tonight. His work was about to be done. The Witch Hunt Madness, a bite-sized fright. This series contains disturbing content. Listener discretion is advised. The wriggling sack was offered to Agnes, who reached inside and withdrew a small black cat. The creature was yowling and spitting ferociously, squirming this way and that in a desperate attempt to free itself. Agnes stared at the animal, her eyes alight with manic fire. Sharp claws raked the loose skin of her withered hand. She felt no pain. With a flick of the wrist, she tossed the creature into the bubbling cauldron. The cat shrieked hideously as it flailed in the searing liquid. Its agonized cries sounded almost human, Agnes thought. She watched the poor beast splash and struggle, its piteous howls becoming weaker and weaker as first its fur was singed away, then the flesh beneath was boiled from its bones. The ominous chanting of her coven grew louder, building until the hooded women were almost shouting their strange incantations into the wind. As the remains of the cat slowly sank out of sight in the oily, bubbling liquid, Agnes raised her hand. The chanting ceased immediately. Silence fell across the moors. Agnes grasped the lip of the cauldron with both hands. The hot metal should have blistered her flesh in an instant. The iron felt cool beneath her bony fingers. With a grunt, Agnes dragged the cauldron from its hooks, causing its contents to spill out across the heather in a great steamy, slippery rush. As the foul liquid drained away into the soil, Agnes surveyed the sludgy, boiled mess it left behind. The cat was there, little more than a skeleton now, along with the twisted carcasses of birds, rats, and other, now unidentifiable, small animals. There were larger bones in there too, and, jutting obscenely out of the steaming pile, human body parts, boiled hands, feet, a grinning skull spotted with lumps of clinging flesh and hair, the remains of a hanged man, stolen from the gallows by the coven earlier that night. Powerful ingredients indeed. At a nod from Agnes, the hooded figures rushed forward, scooping up the grisly remains in their bare hands. Side by side, they strode to the edge of the cliff and hurled the fleshy offerings into the sea. Agnes Sampson went last, tossing the severed head of the hanged man high. It plunged down and disappeared beneath the waves. She turned her face to the sky, breathing in deep the air that was now alive with the crackling tension of an approaching storm. The wind had suddenly begun to howl ferociously. It ripped at the old woman's cloak, causing it to billow out behind her like the wings of some monstrous bat. A drop of rain splashed onto her sunken cheek. Then another, and another. In an instant, Agnes was drenched by a torrential downpour, a hissing mass of water that sheeted from a sky now black as pitch, thick with looming clouds. The dark night turned darker still. There was a brilliant flash of lightning, followed by a deep boom of thunder that made the ground beneath her feet tremble. Agnes could hear huge waves breaking against the cliffs far below, furiously battering themselves into foamy spray. The awesome might of the storm was incredible. Agnes felt more alive than she could ever remember. It seemed the very world around her was tearing itself to pieces. Another jagged streak of lightning ripped a hole in the sky. For a heartbeat, Agnes could see the ship, briefly illuminated through the driving curtains of rain. The vessel was already foundering, tossed about like a child's toy by storm waves that loomed almost as high as the main masts. The ship was trying desperately to turn about, face the foamy mountains of water that bore down upon it, but it was hopeless. In seconds, the vessel would be reduced to splinters, its crew and royal passengers just bloated corpses bobbing in the waves. Thunder shook the heavens again, like the rumbling laughter of the devil himself. Agnes threw back her head, toothless mouth open wide, in a maniacal cackle. In August 1589, Anne of Denmark set sail for Scotland. The young princess was excited. She was due to marry the Scottish king, James VI. However, a series of ferocious storms in the North Sea forced her to abandon the journey and turn the ship about in desperate retreat. When he heard that the ocean crossing had been thwarted by bad weather, King James assembled his own fleet and set sail to rescue his princess. Though mighty storms battered his ships mercilessly, James finally made it to Denmark, where he found himself in a country obsessed with the unholy dangers of black magic and witch hunts. Rumors had already begun to swirl that the ocean storms had been the work of witches, an evil spell cast to drown the young princess before she ever reached Scotland. A series of trials were held in the Danish capital, Copenhagen, and, after extended torture, a woman called Anna Koldings gave up the names of 5 other accomplices. They all confessed to being witches in league with the devil, and that they had conjured the terrible storms, and even sent demons to climb up the keel of Anne's ship. The women were promptly burned to death as punishment for their wicked ways. King James became fascinated with the idea of black magic and witchcraft. Upon returning to Scotland with his new bride, he launched his own witch hunts, hell-bent on rooting out and destroying this evil practice. Hundreds of people across Scotland were persecuted without mercy, most famously in the North Berwick witch trials, where dozens of suspected sorcerers suffered brutal interrogation at the hands of King James's witch finders. Under horrific torture, many finally broke and confessed. They admitted to being in league with the devil himself, that they had met with him in churchyards and danced naked in the moonlight with his demons. They confessed to numerous crimes against the king, including attempts to poison him and his family, using a charm made from the innards of a toad to curse him with infertility, and to summoning great storms in an attempt to sink his ships and send him to a watery grave. One of those who stood accused was Agnes Sampson, an elderly widow from East Lothian, whom the locals claimed had mysterious healing powers. The rough wooden cart clattered over the cobblestones, each jolt and bump sending a sharp spear of pain through Agnes Sampson's broken body. The crowds that lined the street to Castle Hill jeered and screamed, hurling clumps of mud, rocks, and rotten vegetables in her direction. Agnes barely noticed them. She was numb to it by now. Their petty insults and thrown stones were nothing compared to the agony she had already endured. She looked down at her hands. Thick manacles hung heavy around her feeble wrists. Above them, her fingers were purple-black and grotesquely swollen, the bones broken and crushed into uncountable pieces. Her fingernails were gone, ripped out by the torturer's pliers so that iron pins could be driven into the soft, bloody flesh beneath. Agnes had tried so hard to resist the pain. For days and days they had beaten her, smashed her bones, tied a rope around her head and used it to toss her around the dungeon cell like a rag doll. She knew what they wanted her to say. With each blow, they had demanded that she confess. She was a daughter of Satan, elder witch of the coven that had sought to drown the noble king and his young queen. Agnes had resisted, refused to break. Enraged at her obstinance, they had shaved her bald, crudely hacking her hair away in search of the devil's mark on her skin. Then they had hung her from the cell wall, her head encased in an iron cage with four wicked spikes that thrust into her mouth, slicing her tongue and cheeks to ribbons each time she tried to move. They left her there for days, unable to sleep or sit or stand until, finally, Agnes had crumbled. She confessed to everything. She was a witch, in league with Satan, and she had conjured those terrible storms by hurling a dead cat and the severed limbs of a corpse into the ocean. The torture had stopped, and they had left her alone in the cell, broken and bloody, awaiting death. The cart rattled to a halt at the top of Castle Hill. Agnes turned stiffly and saw the hangman's gallows looming above her. A huge bonfire had been built alongside it, piled high around a wooden stake. The executioner was waiting for her, eyes glittering through the holes in his black hood. Rough hands seized Agnes and dragged her from the cart. They had to carry her up the crude steps to the gallows platform. Her feet had been crushed in spiked iron boots, reduced to tiny, mangled lumps of useless flesh. Agnes stared down at the gathered crowd as the executioner chained her to the stake, a roaring sea of flushed, angry faces howling for her death. If she truly had any sort of dark power, Agnes thought, she would have cursed them all, damned the city, the people, and their wretched king to burn for all eternity. A great cheer rose from the collective throats of the crowd as the executioner slipped a thin rope around Agnes's neck and pulled it taut. She could hear the man grunting with the effort as he began to twist the rope slowly, tighter and tighter. It bit deep into her flesh, choking the life out of her. Blood roared in her head. Her eyeballs felt ready to burst with the terrible, growing pressure. Her useless feet jerked and twitched in a hideous, macabre parody of a dance. She tried to suck down one last desperate breath as darkness strained on the edges of her vision. The executioner twisted the noose again. She felt the crunch of something collapsing in her throat, and the world turned black and silent. King James himself oversaw the interrogation, torture, and confession of Agnes Sampson. After she had been strangled to death, her body was burnt at the stake, a lesson to any other would-be witches plotting against the crown. It is said that her naked, bald, and bloodied ghost now haunts the royal palace of Holyrood in Edinburgh, wandering the halls in everlasting agony. An estimated 6,000 people, mostly women, were tried for witchcraft in Scotland in the 16th and 17th centuries. Far more than in any other country in Britain. More than 1,500 of those accused were violently executed. King James even wrote a book on the subject, Demonology, which discussed his beliefs on the evils of witchcraft and black magic, along with other subjects, such as werewolves, demons, and vampires. This book, and its gruesome details about the North Berwick witch trials, were the inspiration behind the Weird Sisters, or the Three Witches, that appear in William Shakespeare's famous play, Macbeth. Aggressive witch hunts were by no means limited to Scotland, however. England saw its fair share too, with one notable case involving a woman named Joan Flowers. She stood accused of using devilish spells to murder two young boys from a noble family in Leicestershire. Joan vehemently protested her innocence and demanded that she be allowed to eat bread blessed by a priest, something so holy no witch would be able to consume it. She choked to death on the first bite. In 1486, a German priest named Heinrich Kramer published the Malleus Maleficarum, the Hammer of Witches, a book which detailed the finer points of identifying and exterminating these servants of Satan. By the late 1500s, Germany had become the witch-burning capital of the world. A strange madness seemed to envelop the country. People were seeing evil hiding behind every corner, lurking in every shadow. Nobody was safe from accusation or persecution. Men, women, children, peasants, and nobles alike all fell victim to the superstitious mania that swept the land. 250 people were beheaded and burned at the stake in the German city of Fulda after a woman named Murga Bein confessed that her current pregnancy was the result of a lustful relationship with the devil himself. More than 1,000 supposed witches were executed shortly after in Bamberg, accused of destroying the harvest with a devastating frost and icy rain. In one village, 500 people were strangled or roasted alive on huge bonfires to purify their evil souls. A gruesomely impressive feat, considering the population of the area was only a little over 2,000. Some villagers were left with only a single female resident still alive after the brutal trials had passed through. The hysteria spread throughout the continent, with mass executions occurring in France, Spain, Sweden, and Finland, to name a few. Then, as pilgrims from Europe traveled to the New World, they took their old fears and superstitions with them. In 1692, 100 years after Agnes Sampson was strangled and burned in Scotland, perhaps the most infamous witch trials of all time took place in the small town of Salem, Massachusetts. 11-year-old Abigail Williams and her 9-year-old cousin Betty Paris had recently become afflicted with terrible, uncontrollable fits. They would spasm and shake, scream in nonsense languages while hurling objects around the room, crawl under furniture and contort their bodies into strange, unnatural positions. The mysterious condition seemed to spread to other young girls in the town, and before long the finger of accusation was being pointed at their neighbors and other Salem residents. More than 200 people were tried as witches, accused of cursing the girls with the odd affliction. 19 were executed by hanging, at least 5 more died rotting in prison. One man, Giles Corey, was pressed to death, crushed between 2 wooden platforms piled with rocks for refusing to confess. The witch trial hysteria was short-lived in America. By the early 1700s, it was all but over. Then, in 1817, an outrageous story reignited the witch craze, and would go on to leave a legacy that is still felt to this day, the terrifying tale of the Bell Witch Haunting. The Bell family, who lived in a cabin deep in the dark woods of Tennessee, began complaining of odd events happening around their home. Mysterious knocking sounds from the outside walls, faint whispering voices in the darkness that sounded like an old woman singing softly, the drag of invisible chains and shuffling footsteps across the cabin floor. As the family slept, their bed covers would be suddenly ripped from them by some unseen entity, which soon began to attack them, pulling their hair or viciously slapping and pinching them, leaving bright, bruised hand marks on their skin. This entity, which became known as the Bell Witch, plagued the family for years, sometimes screaming or cackling with laughter or raining hateful curses down upon them. The haunting gathered so much attention that even President Andrew Jackson paid a visit to the Bell homestead, to see the horrors for himself. It is said that the Bell Witch still haunts the area, particularly a small cave near Adams, Tennessee. To this day, people report hearing disembodied shrieks and screams in the nearby forest, and some have even claimed to see the ghostly figure of a woman standing on the cliff overlooking the cave, silhouetted in the moonlight. The Bell Witch haunting inspired numerous books and films, including one of the most original and terrifying horror movies of all time, The Blair Witch Project, released in 1999. In the movie, three student filmmakers hike into the dark woods to investigate a disturbing local legend. The area is supposedly haunted by the ghost of a woman whose feet never touch the ground, a child-killing witch driven into exile by frightened townsfolk to die cold and alone in the forest. Times have changed. This modern Blair Witch is purely fictional, a story designed to scare and entertain. While only a few hundred years ago, to so many people, witches were incredibly and terrifyingly real. But what do you think? Were these witches really monsters who dabbled in dark magic and consorted with the devil? Satan's puppets who danced and cackled around bubbling cauldrons? Or were they just unfortunate victims in a time of persecution and superstition? Poor souls who cracked under horrific torture we can't even begin to imagine. Estimates suggest that close to 100,000 people were executed as witches in Europe alone. There must have been at least one true witch among them. They can't all have been innocent, can they? We would love to hear your own thoughts and ideas about these bewitching tales. If you have enjoyed this episode, please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at PixelElixir, and subscribe at BitesizedFrights.com so that you never miss any of our terrifying tales. This has been a Pixel Elixir production, narrated by Chris Kay. Thank you for listening. Until the next bite, my friends.